Welcome to the Revolution Church Podcast.
I'm standing today because I have a lot of material, so I had to put that on my chair. So that's where we're going to be today. So I'm just trying to get this thing adjusted the best. I'm not used to standing all the time. Hold on one second. I got to get my microphone. I am just unprepared today. Is that good? Hopefully it doesn't hit against the necklace or anything. Put this away so it doesn't move around. Good morning. And let's see what we got here. We got all sorts of these buttons. There was a big Apple update last night, so I don't know if it changed anything, but good morning. So here we are. Hey, everybody. I have had like a cold for 3 weeks, and it kind of comes and goes. And I have, you know, a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old. And if you know anything about that age, they bring the sickness. They bring the sickness with them. And so colds go all around constantly. And then I had the wrong address on my insurance, and I thought, well, that'll be easy. And I call the insurance and like, oh no, you have to call the city of Washington. And it was quite a trip, but we got that figured out as well. But living life on life's terms, and hope you're all doing well. Hope you had a great, I don't know, has there been a holiday? We missed Easter. We missed the big one, right? My kids are, I thought they had already had spring break, and then found out that this week they have spring break again. So I guess the last break was winter break. Never quite get used to that. But they went with their mom to see the eclipse. So they're on a little road trip to see the eclipse. So we are still in Galatians 4. Shocking, I know. Galatians 4 was the one I always tried to read through quickly because it's probably, I always thought it was a bit passe, not passe, but just boring and a lot of like facts and analogies and things like that. But now I've really been digging it because we've been going so deep with the scholarship. And it's been really great. I want to do something on scholarship and like deconstruction, because I feel like the word deconstruction is being thrown around a whole lot. And I don't know if we quite, like, I think it's almost being used like one of those words like scapegoating, or everybody thinks their ex partner is a what do they always say? Oh, they're such a narcissist, you know. But you know, there's no proof of that, no psychological proof that, I mean, because that's actually a psychological problem. And so we just use these words, and then these words lose their meaning. And I think we should think about doing something about talking about deconstruction and what that is. Because I think there's these broad things happening, and I don't think there's anything wrong with just like leaving the church because you're dissatisfied or because you don't believe in God anymore. I mean, I think that happens, but that's not deconstruction. So I think it'd be interesting to talk about what is deconstruction and what does it look like. And what's made me think about that is going through all this scholarship and how really good scholarship kind of makes you start to think like a heretic, and and in a good way. And it helps kind of reshape how you see things. And for me, it's even just reshaped how just seeing the church as whole in general, and the customs and the traditions that we've grown up in, it's just a very different, unique way. And so I think scholarship for me has become quite important on this journey. I mean, I also love theology, and I love philosophy, and all that. But the scholarship for me on this book of Galatians that I've read hundreds of times has really just opened it up and taken me to such a different level of my own convictions and thinking. So here we are. Let's jump right into this. And let's get through four today. We got to get into five. I really like five. And I really like six. So I like four too. It's just, it's very, there's a lot here. So sorry, I ended up the other night being lazy and taking my notes in one of the books I was reading. So I have one of the books I'm reading and I have my notebook. So bear with me if you will. I appreciate it. So once again, we're in Galatians. Galatians is quite an interesting letter because, you know, it's Paul's letter to the Galatians. The Galatians are completely like this split community. And they're split because of a group of Jewish Christians who come in called the Judaizers. And they're saying, hey, listen, we think you need to be circumcised and you need to really convert to Judaism and you need to practice some of our traditions in order to be a Christian. Like you need to become, you know, you need to be Jewish and, you know, become, you know, convert to Judaism and then able to convert to Christianity. And circumcision was the big thing that was going on here. Sorry, I'm trying to find my place here. So I put on we did a Revolution Amazon list that you guys recommended, and I did put on there a music stand, and I saw that it wasn't there today, which means somebody got us the music stand, so I won't have to like lean down like this again for another talk. So I appreciate that. Really excited. You guys are really like supported it. Like we've gotten real, I've got, you know, you've given incredible books and all this stuff. I'm just really, really, really excited about it. All right, well, we're just gonna go ahead and jump in. Galatians 4:21 says, "Tell me, you who desire to be subject to the law, will you not listen to the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, one by a slave woman and one other by a free woman. One of the children of the slave was born according to the flesh. The other, the child of the free woman, was born through the promise." Now, this is an allegory. Now, here's the thing about this allegory, which is really interesting, is this is, you know, people always be like, oh, you got to do a lot of gymnastics, you know, you got to, a lot of, you know, acrobats to make the verses say that, or the scripture say that, or this, think that. And what we're about to see, I think, and Paul's using it in the form of an allegory, is Paul doing some of that? And I think, I mean, and he really does it in a very, like, drop the mic way. It's really cool how he does it. And you go, hey, Jay, what's an allegory? And I'm sure most of you know, but I went ahead and made sure I had the right definition for everybody. It's a story, a poem, or a picture that can be interpreted to reveal a hidden meaning. So this is what Paul's doing with this beloved story, this beloved tale of Abraham and Isaac and everything. And he's saying, all right, I'm going to use this as an allegory with a deeper message here for you guys, for you. Interesting, going through the scholarship and stuff, realizing like what some of the stuff it talks about, like Luther's view and Calvin's view, you know, which obviously came much later, but how both of them felt, did not feel comfortable with allegories. Like they felt like it wasn't something that should be used in teaching the word and things like that, even though you have the Apostle Paul using it. And so I just think that's interesting. Like they felt like, you know, even they weren't even that thrilled about Paul's use of it. I mean, but it's Paul, so what can you do? But I find that really interesting that we often, like how we're just, we can blatantly frame things. And if you feel like you're influential enough or important enough, you can say, well, I don't really think that this is the way we should do it. Now, disagreeing with Paul is fine because even Paul said God shows no favor. So it's not like Paul is the end-all, say-all of everything. And that, unfortunately, is often what we do with Paul and with other people, other authors in the Bible. Even though they'll say, you know, Paul will say, well, God's no respecter of man, you know. And then we go, Paul, don't be so humble. You know, you've put down into the word, what is the law? And I think Paul would, in some ways, really be terrified by that idea, because he's trying to keep these people in Galatians from, you know, not just from circumcision, because like Greeks would have seen that in a way as especially in Macedonia, I can't always remember that name of that place, but as kind of a as like wounding yourself, as like self-harm, you know. And so that would have been, but it's not just that, but it's also certain holidays and certain ways of eating and certain things. So, you know, that it's interesting what Paul's trying to do here, and how we take even books like this and turn them into law. I mean, I remember I have a tattoo. Didn't go anywhere. I have a couple tattoos, actually, of Jesus. And I remember a very close friend of mine sitting me down and going, like, we need to talk. And they're like, that's an image of Jesus. You put that's a, you know, don't you know that's people won't inherit the God? And they started using Galatians against me for some reason, and idol worship and that type of thing. And I was just like, I was really blown away by it, because it's just crazy how literal people will take things and then just be like, oh, well, you know, and this is what that must mean to enjoy hell. I love it. So, oh, thank you. Thank you, the beard. So anyway, that's the allegory. A story, a poem, a picture that can be interpreted to reveal a hidden meaning. Peter Rollins is good at that. He tells parables and allegories and things like that, and they're always not what you think they're going to be, and they usually make you chuckle a little bit, and then they hit you with some like heavy truth. And I wish I had that storytelling technique, but I don't. Especially when you're like Irish. I mean, Irish people are great storytellers. But I was just really surprised that like Calvin and Luther weren't fans of this. And like, this is like Luther's book, you know, like this was Luther's big aha moment book, you know. And Calvin certainly liked Paul. Anyway, so let's look at this. Let's look at now. And he goes, okay, now this is an allegory. These women are two covenants. One woman, in fact, is Hagar from Mount Sinai, bearing children from slavery. Now, Hagar of Mount Sinai is Arab and corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. But the other woman corresponds to the Jerusalem above, which is like the ultimate Jerusalem, the spiritual Jerusalem. She is free, and she is our mother. For it is written, rejoice, O children, one you who bear no children, burst into song and shout, you who endured no birth pains, for the children of the desolate woman are more numerous than the children of the one who is married. And he goes, now you, my friends, are the promise like Isaac. But just as the time of the child was born according to the flesh and persecuted, the child who was born according to the spirit. So this is where we're going to see a little bit of dancing with a little bit of acrobats with the Apostle Paul. Are you ready? So 26. So when he says the great city of Jerusalem, and he's confronting his challengers here, and he's kind of saying that's the kingdom of God, like that's the realm, and he's saying it's already there, the above Jerusalem. So that's often we get these kings confused with like heaven and afterlife and after death and life after death and all this stuff, and Paul doesn't seem to always get that. The heavenly Jerusalem could be conceived as already present. Paul's earlier Christians, you know, already, or some way Paul would sometimes say already, but not yet. It's like, it's already here, but not yet. Like, what do you say there? But he's always, Paul does make it clear is that believers are experiencing a foretaste of the citizenship of the above Jerusalem. And so that's kind of like the kingdom of God. And a lot of times people are always saying, well, you won't inherit the kingdom of God, you won't do these things. And the kingdom of God often gets confused with heaven. And I think that's another important thing to talk about, because when we become so focused on the afterlife, heaven and hell and things like that, I feel like we often just, I mean, you've heard it, you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good, that we don't focus on the now. We don't focus on each other. So I think that's important to look at. Now, in 4:27, you know, it says, "For it is written, rejoice, O you childless one, you who bear no children." And the reason Paul's saying this is because to be barren was considered a great disgrace for women. The woman at the well, when Jesus says, "Oh, you know, who are you with?" Well, you're not even living with the man. You know, you're not the man you're living with. You've had like so many husbands, and the one you're living with is not even your husband. And everybody would be like, "Oh, she was, what a bad, nasty lady, what a wild woman." Whatever. I don't think we should judge people that way. But what I'm saying is that was what I heard growing up. But more than likely, that woman at the well, that Jesus says, "Oh, I'm the one you're looking, I'm the Messiah," and she goes back and tells everybody, was more likely a barren. She was probably not able to have children, and so as soon as men would see her, I mean, it was okay to divorce a barren woman. It was almost seen as a duty, in a Judean tradition, to consider this a duty for the sake of childbearing and to have heirs and things like that. So this was something that happened a lot. But it was believed sometimes that God visited the barren and provided children. Now, this is interesting because if you start thinking about Jesus, you know, and like God showing up and providing children for the barren woman, or in this story. So he's, but what's being argued here and what's interesting about this is, one, the virgin birth, which that would not be a hill I would want to die on, theologically or just normal. To me, it would make no difference. But it was definitely a tradition. It was definitely something that, like, oh, you know, so, oh, pray to God that you have children so you're not worthless. And unfortunately, this is how women were seen at this time, as, you know, like, you know, your worth is in your childbearing and this, and it's often seen as property. And so that was, that's why I also say, like, you know, when we read the Bible, we have to remember that we're within such a different context. We're in such a different place. You know, and we're trying to understand like this Middle Eastern like concept and then try to make it some American, you know, like American Christianity is just like that. And it's just not the way it is. We can't, you know, we can't transfer a 2,000-year-old Middle Eastern context and then put it into our own context every day. We have to look at it. We have to struggle. We have to wrestle with it. It's why things change. We see things differently. They didn't have concepts of sexuality like we have concepts of sexuality. So content, as Kelly Wilson has just said, context is everything. It's valuable. It's important. It lets us know where we're at. It lets we know what people are going through. And that's why I love scholarship. That's why I love biblical scholarship, because I like the context. You know, I just think it's so valuable. And so, but so he goes, "Rejoice, you childless one, you who bear no children." And then Paul goes into this even further and says, you know, "You now are like women of the barren mother, Sarah's birth, because it's a miraculous birth. It's a birth of the Spirit." And he's bringing in the Gentiles. Now, there were some thoughts in first century Judaism that some Gentiles would be included, but not wasn't like a big thing, but it wasn't like all Gentiles. And Paul's saying, like, you're all included because you are all would be considered the spiritual birth, a spiritual. And so he's taking what most Gentiles would be seeing like people of the slave woman. And I'm guessing that that's what his critics are doing, or they're coming in and they're saying, well, you're not, you're like child of the slave woman. And so you need to be circumcised. And everybody, all Abraham's children were circumcised. I mean, it's just, this is why you see Paul's doing this interesting thing in this allegory that's really valuable for him to show people that it's not about works. It is not about the flesh. It is not even, he's like saying, like, I want you to see that you, this is all about something that you have nothing to do with. It is the Spirit, is it a miracle, and it is for everyone. And that's what salvation is. It is not about you. And so when Paul wrote Galatians, I'm just reading from one of my books here. When Paul wrote Galatians, earthly Jerusalem was flourishing. And sometimes persecuted Christian movement was, by comparison, more like the deserted woman. So, you know, this is something that Christians would be familiar with, you know. It's you know, being persecuted, being seen as children of the slave women and things like that. And Paul is really trying to give them this idea that, no, you're free, you know. But this is something that they would have seen happening. And Paul sees the influx of Gentile children of Abraham and Isaac as a fulfillment of Isaac's promise. But I'm guaranteeing you that this is not what his critics were saying in Galatians. And so Paul's really using the scriptures, using their words, probably in turning it on them. And I think that's why he puts the idea of, like, this is an allegory. I want to give you an allegory. I'm not saying this is exactly what it is, but this is an allegory and this is what it is now. So this is very interesting, Paul's use of scripture here. You know, this is the type of thing that we would often, that more conservatives would be like, oh, that's, you know, that's not what it is. It's supposed to be, you know, this, you know, and that way. And Paul's going, no. You know, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to explain it. And I'm very Paulinian, and I think it's very valuable to look. Why do we talk about the Bible? I don't know. Why do we ask questions to people talking about the Bible? I talk about the Bible because I'm hoping it's going to lead us all to be, to hopefully accept ourselves more, to love each other more, and to even put our religious beliefs aside, to help community and the world grow and become a better place by actually loving our neighbors and loving our enemies, by having tough conversations, by making sure that even your enemies have enough to eat and food on their table. And that's why I talk about the Bible. I don't know why everybody else, I know why other people do too, but it's not always the same reasons. But here we go. Now you, my friends, are children of the promise of Isaac, but just as at the time the child who was born according to the flesh is persecuted, the child who was born according to the Spirit. So he's saying, listen to this again. But just as at the time the child who was born according to the flesh persecuted the child who was born according to the Spirit, so it is now also. Now this is Paul being very cheeky here and kind of like being really tough here. Is because he's saying these people who want to force you to be circumcised, these people who want to force you to follow certain holidays and certain ideas and not eat certain meats and not do certain things, he's saying that they are acting as the slave children. They're acting as the children born of the flesh. And they're trying to force you to be like them. So he's saying, like, you know, the flesh prosecuted the child who was born according to the Spirit. And so he's saying, you are children according to the Spirit, not the flesh. And so what he's saying is that this law, that this is of the flesh, that getting circumcision is of the flesh, of certain holidays are of the flesh. These are things that just don't matter. Like if you went to church on Easter or not, it doesn't really matter. if you go to church, it doesn't matter. Those are things of the flesh as well. And we often don't see that. Ugh. In verses 28 and 29, where it says, my friend, you know, you are children of the promise like Isaac, you know, that was something I didn't hear growing up very much, you know, that you were that the Judaizers, that the ones persecuting Paul, were the children of the flesh, were doing works of the flesh. I was always told the flesh was like lust and sex before marriage and cigarettes and, you know, rock and roll music and, you know, things like that, you know, not like religious sacrifice. That wasn't pointed out to me as being of the flesh growing up. And Paul is being very particular here. He's like, when we return to the law, it is returning to its flesh. It's not about good works. It's not about bad works, because both of those things are about the flesh. Pretty crazy, right? Sorry, everybody. I'm a little bit all over the place today. Now, one of the things I was thinking about is, I don't just think that this is what's happening in Galatians is similar to what's happening in the Christian church today, where we kind of have this split and we have people going like, you have to work by the, you know, you have these Judaizers who are Christian, and I believe they're Christian Jews. They claim to be Christians. And they're saying, you know, and Paul's saying they're under a curse because they're going back to the flesh and all this stuff. But saying you have to live this way or you're not really a Christian. I don't think it's just like, this is like something that we can be like, oh yeah, this is really similar to what's happening in the church. But I think it actually is what's happening in the church and Christian today, is that we created new laws under Christianity. We even use people like Paul and Jesus and James and all these things, and we create these new laws and these works of the flesh to say that you are accepted. You know, I've had people on both sides, because people on both sides fear grace in different ways. You know, more conservatives think that grace is this light, it's going to be a slippery slope, license to sin, you know, oh, slippery slope to hell. And a lot of progressives think it's going to be this license to like not feed the hungry and, you know, not do things. I mean, I was time at a progressive say like, oh, you preach too much grace, man. You know, and their whole thing was that they'd like to protest and, you know, ran a car on veggie oil and stuff. You know, and it's like all these things that we decide like, this is where our acceptance is based on. This is what gets us there, rather than embracing the lack within us. And it's funny because I think both sides often miss the whole part of loving your enemies. And so you have this type of purity culture, and this purity culture becomes the works of the flesh. And it's, you know, the purity culture on the left is often rules of why the right, we don't accept the right, or why my, you know, why my cousin who's conservative really isn't Christian because they say they're, but they're not, you know. And so that's kind of this purity culture on the right. And then, I mean, on the left, and then the purity culture on the right is one we're all familiar with, like, oh, I've got a ring that reminds me not to have sex until I get married, and, you know, I vote this way and I think this way. But we all have these kind of circumcisions that we have that we think we need for grace. So both sides practice it. And my question is, are we practicing it? Like, I'm not here to attack people. I'm here to attack systems, and that systems that promote this type of circumcision in our lives, that want to circumcise certain things away from us. When I first became an ally for my LGBTQ brothers and sisters, one of the things that was happening was that, you know, I saw all these kids were getting kicked out of their house. There were suicides happening. You know, families were separating. And I was like, this is just not right. You know, we've got to stop this. This is horrific. And then the time goes by, because I became affirming, I think it was 2005. time goes by and people tell me I'm going to hell and I'm a sinner. Boop, 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 boop. And then here I am and I'm with my, now this is funny because I remember one of the first things, I'll tell this story real quick. One of the first things that happened was when I lost all my speaking engagements when I became affirming. And so I moved over to like these more progressive churches. And I remember I spoke on Galatians in this really progressive church. And I was like, oh, so nice to be speaking again. I don't think I'd spoken for like a year at a church. And so this was really great. And I was speaking and felt really great about it. I was like, all right, you know, I'm back in the saddle. And all of a sudden the assistant pastor calls me into her office. And I go, hey, what's happening? She goes, we got a problem. And I'm like, oh, shit. What is it? And she began to tell me why me using God's pronouns as a he was offensive and very hurtful and all this stuff. Now, for me, that was not on my radar at that time. For me, I was like, I had just been fighting the good fight, you know, for my LGBTQ brothers and sisters, and pronouns weren't on my radar yet. And so then all of a sudden, now pronouns are on my radar because of this person. But she did not come in a way of a graceful way. She came in a very like angry way of like, listen, you're a white male coming to this church saying God is a man. And I was like, listen, I read, at the time I was reading the New Living, so I'm sure it was like he all over the place. I don't read that version anymore. But she really let me have it. And I just remember like feeling so like empty inside, like just so like, oh, I don't have a place to be. Like everywhere I go around people who follow Jesus, it's always condemnation. It's always, you didn't do this right. You didn't get this right. There's always a type of circumcision required to be within that context, rather than a graceful way of, we got it, we can confront each other. We should confront each other, but we should find graceful ways to do that. We should find, you know, and there's times when there are not graceful ways, and we've tried every other way, then we have to do certain things, nonviolent action or protest or things like that, you know. We need to have hard conversations. But I found that to have a hard conversation, the first thing to do is not come in and be like, you know, the first thing to do is maybe like, hey, have you thought about this? Hey, have you thought about that? My buddy Pete Rollins just posted this really cool talk about the joy we get from like judging the other in a way. And I sent it to a few people who I felt might be doing that, which I wasn't trying to be passive aggressive. I was just trying to like, these are, if I send you something and I'm to go, hey, you should look at this and I'm concerned about you, that's rare for me to do for a lot of people. And so it does mean I give a damn. It doesn't mean I'm trying to be a bastard. And this one guy who me and him have probably been arguing about things for a couple of years, we had a really great conversation about this. And I learned a lot about them and they learned a lot about me. And I was so grateful for this kind of idea of like, oh, like, cause I was like, hey, I think you're being too harsh on these people on the right, you know? And we had a good conversation. Now, did we come to an agreement at the end? No, but I feel like I have someone I know and someone this conversation will grow and we'll continue to go another and we'll understand each other in different ways. Cause I learned things that I didn't know. And that's brilliant. That's what we want to do. But instead we have these kind of like our own circumcision, our own special holidays, our own traditions, our own don't eat this, don't do that, don't think that way, don't see this way. That is kind of if you're in or you're out. And we also get, we get very focused on identity politics and who's in and who's out. And I think if we should like be in, really like, how do we get everybody? I mean, for me right now, the goal is how do we get everybody to be able to eat well, to have a good job, to be able to pay the rent, myself included, like conservatives and liberals. And, you know, how do we all get to a place where we can live comfortably and then maybe have these conversations where we're not killing each other, you know, where we're not all homeless? Because I think that's kind of the emergency thing that's going off in this country right now, is that nobody can afford anything. And I think that might be the more important thing than just, you know, how do we get along? Like, hey, maybe we need to do this and focus on, because that could bring us together as well. You know, seeing that there's bigger issues in the world than our politics about our religious identity, our spiritual identity, our identity, or whatever, that there's bigger that need to be fixed, that need to be stopped. But I think this is exactly what's happening in the church today. In that purity culture and this idea of, and I wrote this down, and I should keep my notes better. But I wrote this down, and I found it really, really interesting. Oh, yeah. I'm going to read from a commentary on Galatians by Greg Kinnear. Paul cannot here urge them to cast out everyone who keeps the law, referring to the Jews and contemporaries generally, obviously to most Jews, were not part of the community of believers that he addressed. He must refer to the particular children of slavery. And that's what he's saying. His enemies are the children of slavery. And this is what he says about them, who are theologically oppressing them. And I like that idea of theological oppression and how often we use our theology to oppress others. And we don't even realize it, you know. I felt very oppressed growing up in the church. Like I felt like I was, oh, I'm going to hell and I'm going to burn forever, you know. And there's all this, you know, the times we use theology, and you see it so often in a lot of these different theologies where it's just comes in to oppress a certain group or the thems, you know, and to divide us. And Paul's going to say in 5, and we may get there next week. We'll be in 5 next week, but we might not get this far in 5. But Paul's going to say, you know, however, if you bite and devour one another, care that you are not consumed by each other. And it really is like in the, I would say, 2010s, there was a lot of neo-Calvinists. It was an interesting time because you had a lot of neo-Calvinists and you had a lot of the new atheists and you had a lot of these things. And you had a lot of people who were trying to argue that they were the true Christians, that they were the right ones and that you were the wrong ones, or that Christianity was bullshit completely. And it was, you know, and there was no real room for conversation. It was more like proof texting. Everybody was proof texting their way through it, you know? And so, and weird thing was that you had these two extreme sides that were both fundamentalists in a way. And how I say this is they both like read the Bible in literal tense, you know, like, I always said, like, atheists and fundamentalists are the only two people who read the Bible literally, you know. So you have these two people who are like, you know, and we're all like in the middle, and there's this huge war of people tearing each other apart. And it's because when we do this, that is the flesh. That is memory verses. That is going to camp. That is going like, I am a follower of Calvin. I am a follower of Luther. I am a follower of Paul. I am a follower. And all of them are like, Paul was like, no. That's not how it works. And we've done it. We've created laws and we've become these people who are theological manipulators and use theological manipulation to hurt others, or often we'll do it to just make sure that we're included. So you'll get things like, well, Jesus, I don't think Jesus ate meat. I think Jesus was a vegan and I'm a vegan and we're vegans. You know what I mean? Or, I've seen every group kind of adopt their own thing. I remember one time I was watching this show, Give Me a Break, as a kid, and Nell Carter takes her, the little kid that she works at his house, and he's a little white kid, and Nell Carter's a black woman, and she takes him over to her parents' house for Christmas dinner or something like that. And he goes, Nell, why is Jesus black in that picture? And she goes, honey, if you go to Kermit the Frog's house, Jesus is green. You know, and the idea is like, you know, we all kind of have Jesus in our own image. Ironically, Nell Carter came on the PTL show and was interviewed by my mom. And when my mom talked to her, she says, this is the only Christian show I've ever done. And my mom was like, oh, why is that? And she's like, because I'm afraid. I'm afraid of Christians. You guys can really be mean and judgmental and hurtful. And, you know, they'll know you by your fruit, which we're going to get into in Galatians as well. Most people think of Christianity as this very strange thing. I was honestly thinking today, I've applied for a lot of jobs recently. And it's been an online thing. It hasn't, like, I've been going, I've gone into person in some places, but most jobs I just applied online and I haven't gotten. I started wondering, like, I wonder if they just have like a pile of applications. And as soon as they see pastor, they're just like, oh, we don't need this baggage. We don't need some guy trying to tell us about Jesus. why we work, you know, our shifts. I don't know if that's true or not. That's just my own paranoid, weird thing. I'm like, maybe I should put like another job on there. But that's what we've kind of been known as, is trouble. And we become even more trouble to each other. But I love how Paul takes this verse and uses it as an allegory to point out the fact that when people come in and try to force you to do something to be accepted, that is the flesh. And no matter what the, he's like, it doesn't matter how you traditionally see this, these verses, as thinking that, well, you know, the Gentiles are the slave children and the Jews are the free children. He's saying that anybody who has Christ is child of the free children. And it's a spiritual thing and it's not a physical thing. And he's like, and the opposite of that is of the flesh. And when we try to work in the flesh. And so that's what we have to remember. Do we help the poor? Do we do this? Of course, you know, that's loving others and loving others, but it comes from being accepted and knowing you're accepted. And we do it because it helps somebody else. We do it because we love others. When we start doing it to think that it somehow makes us superior to others, or it's something that we have to show off, or somehow it's how God's, we get God's approval, whatever God is to you. I mean, to me, God is kind of the ground of being. But whatever we're doing, when we do that and it becomes legalism and it becomes works, it's the flesh. And so when the Bible talks about dying to your flesh and picking up your cross, it's saying these are the things. Like, if you're doing this stuff to be approved of, you know, and it's crazy because I know how it works. You know, I mean, I've got friends who've, you know, done that. And some of the, you know, and you who do these great things and work with, do all this stuff. And sometimes you go around and you go like, I don't feel like I'm Christian enough, you know? And I think that's the time where you have to ask yourself questions like, not am I being judged by them, but am I judging myself? And if I, you know, what is my purpose? Like when I worked at this place called Safe House growing up, and it was a ministry to the homeless, and it's still there. It's a great place. They gave me, you know, they allowed me to do Revolution. But when I was there, I went through all this struggle I felt like, oh, I'm not doing all this stuff with, you know, I'm doing all this stuff with the homeless. I'm going out there, I'm feeding people, I'm helping people. And yet I don't feel satisfied. And so what am I doing? Like, am I bad? Is there something wrong with me? And what I realized is that that just wasn't my place. And that was not saying that wasn't my place to help those people, because I continue. But I went to my job and I said, I feel guilty. I feel like I'm bad. There's something wrong with me. And the pastor said, no. This isn't your purpose. Your purpose is you love those punk rock kids and all those crazy people out there who, you know, you think are slipping through all those people down in little 5 points and all that stuff. He's like, that's where you should be. And you should be reaching out to those people. You know, you want people to see Christianity differently. That's what you want. You know, and what they did is they made a place for me there, and they gave me an office and they gave me a job. And these were people who would have been seen as conservative Christians, and they allowed me to do my work even when it ruffled feathers and when it got put in, you know, Christian magazines were questioning me and all these crazy things. They still allowed me to do there and do the work that I was called to do. And we were able to get people involved with them and them involved with us, and it kind of crossed over. And that was a really cool thing, is finding like, where is my heart? You know, where is that? Now that's changed over the years. You know, I'm a 48-year-old guy, so I'm not out there like, hey guys, I'm skating for Jesus. you know, now I have a bigger, broader vision of seeing us all learn to argue well, to disagree well, and find unity through diversity. And not just diversity of sexuality or skin tone or politics or things like that, but also diversity in thinking. Like, why do we think differently? Can we still work together? And can we learn to show grace to one another? And can we even learn to compromise to make the world a better place? You go, oh, compromise is such a bad word. But we're going to have to learn to compromise as a country and as in politics especially, if we want to see people get off the streets, if we want to see people get livable wages, if we want to see things like that, if we want to find out what's important, we're going to have to be like, I'm neither Jew nor Gentile, slave nor free, Christian or atheist, none of that. We're not going to put that into the politics, but we're going to work politics to make the world a better place for all people, not just us. And when it becomes just us, that seems to become a very fleshly, self-centered move. So Paul's allegory here is just basically turning the Abraham story on its head a little bit and saying, you know, the flesh is works. The flesh is the law. The flesh is rebuilding the old system. And the free child, the child by the Spirit, is knowing you're accepted and loving each other. So I think that's really a fantastic idea. And it's so great. So it ends here in 5:1, actually. So we're going to finish up here. And it says, let's just, in 31, Galatians 4:31 says, and I'm going to read right into 1 because they kind of connect to each other. So we are children, not of the slave, but of the free woman. For freedom in Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. And slavery is a bit of a harsh word here. But I think when we see how many people who have been hurt in church, and I see all these like different things on the internet, especially on like Instagram and stuff, of people who've really been hurt by the church, and you know, all this stuff of like spiritual abuse recovery things and how to recover from that and all this deconstruction stuff. And I think a lot of these people are saying, like, I was basically have the yoke of slavery on me in the religion, and I allowed people to put that on me and make me feel less than, and that hurt me. And it's saying, don't put that on again. And I feel like what we've done is we've put slavery, we've put ourselves back into this type of slavery, this type of legalism that is, you know, you're only good if, and but, rather than you are accepted. And so my thing is not to fear grace, but to allow grace to work. And it only really works is when we are able to accept it and say, oh, this is it. When we are able to receive it or accept it. Lutherans like the word receive, I think, and I like that too. It's like, receive the gift, this free gift. You are accepted. You are loved. Tillich, who we're going to read in after this, we're going to read his talk on after this, Galatians. So accept that you are accepted by that which is greater than yourself. And so it's not saying like you have to believe more, you have to do this, you don't have to, just know that you are accepted. And there's a beauty in that. And I feel like that's when things transform in our lives. I don't think I've been transformed so much by memory verses or things like that. I've been transformed to the deeper idea of that more inclusion, that more idea of acceptance, that more idea that I am loved. And I have found it that is kind of the key for me to love those who I disagree with and to disagree well with others with a spirit of love, even if it's hostile towards me or even hostile towards those I love, is that knowing where I am. I remember when one of my board members left and said, God is against you, the Holy Spirit is against you. And I had been reading this Brennan Manning book, and if you know anything about Brennan Manning, he's like Mr. Grace. And I said, no. I said, the Father is quite fond of me. And he kind of smiled like, and I said, and I know that. And I accepted the resignation. And so yeah, it's the things haven't changed. It's just, can we see this, and can we see it in a way where we don't have to be hostile towards each other, but where we're able to help each other and change these ideas? I honestly don't think the way to do this change is by mocking conservatives or mocking liberals and mocking each other or talking shit about each other online. I think there's got to be a better way where there is an actual conversation happening, an interaction happening. But we can't do that if there's no one to do it. And that's where revolution comes in. You know, that's where everybody who's watching this comes in, is that's what I hope. I'm encouraging folks who come here every week and attend Revolution or part of this gathering to do that and to do more of that and to love people better. And it's great to, like, sometimes I'll hear people who just like out of the, like, oh, I heard one of your talks, you know, and it made me think like I need to be less judgmental towards these people or that people. And I love to hear that, because that's the work we're trying to do, is we're trying to just help each other become more tolerant and more loving, so we can somehow find unity through diversity. But we only seem to have selected types of diversity that we want. And I'm trying to encourage everybody, all diversity. And that's tough. That is so tough. But that's the whole dying to your flesh and picking up your cross, you know, is saying, oh, and I, the story I was telling earlier that I totally got off the rails with was, and I'll finish with this, was when I saw all these kids being kicked out of their house and stuff in the LGBT community, all these, you know, parents being told to kick their kids out. And I actually met with a pastor who did that, and the daughter hung herself. And I was in the room with the pastor and the children, and the woman's parents, and the pastor was very defensive at the time. But things did change at that church, and it was really kind of wild to see it happen. But it took time. That's another thing. We have to be willing to be patient. Patience is very, very important in this. You know, I've been studying the Troubles in Northern Ireland, which was their civil war. You know, it took 30 years to find peace there. And people were starting to work on that peace almost as beginning as it started. And I watched, you know, John Hume, who was a big part of that. He continued to work, and he never gave up on that idea. And people say, why do you show up every? Why do you do this? Like, you're barely paying your bills, and you're doing this, and you're reading all these books. Because this is, I believe in this. And I've been doing this for 30 years. And if I have to do it for 30 more years, if I'm still alive by then we'll continue to do this, because this is the goal of this work, is to find something that's beyond us, you know, beyond us and them, beyond the divide, beyond binary thinking, beyond black and white thinking. And one of the things that with this is that I, because what I wanted to say was, is that I saw that progressive now started to say, like, well, if your family supports this candidate, you should reject them. But my only worry is who can talk to them. Now, I often meet with people who say, well, I still talk to my parents. We just don't talk about theology and stuff like that. And I'm like, and that's a great place to start. You know, someone earlier asked me, like, how's my dad doing? Honestly, I have a really hard time communicating with that side of my family. I really do my best to find out. I hear he's up and down. He's been having a real battle with, he had some mini strokes and things like that. So I know what it's like to be divided because of religion. But to be honest, I think to being divided because of religion especially Christianity, to me, I think is hypocrisy. I just think, like, that's the last thing that Christianity should do, is divide people. And I think it should help people. But everybody, you know, we get so focused on self-care, and I think self-care is really valuable. So, I mean, it's not for the weak of heart. We need self-care. We need therapy. We need to have time to take to ourselves. We need to have a group of people that can care about us. But when you're ready, there's a time to go in and say, hey, we got to have these tough conversations, you know, because what if we didn't have people like Dr. King? What if we didn't have people like John Hume? What if those people didn't come in and say, okay, I'm going to, you know, even though this is hurtful for me, even though this is a struggle for me, even though these people say awful things to me, I still have hope that this will not only change the people I'm fighting for, but it will help the people who are fighting against us just as much, because it will set them free from their victimhood of misinformation and how they cause victims and hurt people through their misinformation and their belief system. We have to come together. We have to talk about it, because it's the only way that it's going to change. It's not going to change for having some really nasty Instagram account that just tears each other apart all the time, you know. And it's wild, because you go on Instagram and I have all these, like, really progressive people who seem to attack the right, and then I go on X, and I don't even know why I stay on X, because nobody seems to be on there, but I do see a lot of conservatives attacking the left, you know. And I'm just going, like, this isn't getting us anywhere. It's just creating diversity. Diversity. It's not a good kind of diversity. It's discord. It's sowing discord. It's keeping us separated. So there you go. You know, I hope one day we can do this. We're going to continue to talk about this, and that's what we're going to work towards. And it'll happen. Maybe not in my lifetime, but maybe in my kids' lifetime. And I hope so. And that's what we'll continue to do. And love people in a really graceful way, and remind people of that. So just think about that through the week, you know, how you respond to someone. And don't be afraid to ask people questions. You know, that's what I've started doing, even on Instagram, is just being like, hey, can you explain this more to me? And it's funny, though, because people are so hurt, you know, they're you can, you know, they sometimes are very weary of why do you want to know, or what, you know, who are you, or why are you asking me, how did you find out about me? I mean, I've got all those type of responses. And I'm like, algorithm, you know, this is who the algorithms tell me you're part of my world. So let's have a conversation, and let's use the system against itself to maybe unify us rather than keeping us all angry towards one another. Thanks, everybody. We'll jump into Galatians 5 next week and hopefully not get tied down to that yoke of the flesh and works and not be disparaging to one another. And we'll get into that, and hopefully, yeah, we're going to do that. We're just going to stay in Galatians till we get out of it. Thanks for listening. Oh, as always, if you love this work and like what we're doing here, the only way we do it is through your support. We're the church, just put it bluntly, 501c3. You can get a tax write-off by donating to Revolution by going to revolutionchurch.com. And there's a Venmo and PayPal. You know what the irony is? Is like, I had so many people asking me to get Venmo. And I've been trying to deal with the, you know, we got it finally. It took us like a year to get Venmo. So we go, oh, I don't want to use PayPal. We only use Venmo. I'm like, okay, I got Venmo. And I was on Venmo the other day, and it was like, Venmo, a company of PayPal. I was like, so capitalism is just turning everything into one big glob. But yeah, we could really use your support financially. It would help keep us going and keep the work going. And we won't give up. Don't you give up. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To make your 100% tax-deductible donation today, please visit revolutionchurch.com/donate. You can also learn more by clicking the donate section on the website.